Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome into the show this morning, Hunt Fish Talk, our monthly show where we discuss the hot topics that concern the sportsmen here in South Louisiana. Never a shortage of them, by the way. Glad to have you listening this morning. Of course, I'm joined by our regular guests on the show this morning. Wendy, the Bayou Woman Billiard, joins us this morning. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, Keith.
And Don Dubuque as well. Good morning, Don.
Hey, good morning. I had to get up early to do this show.
Yeah. All right, well, let's kick things off this morning with our first topic, and that is the proposed $90 million residential/resort project that developers have proposed to be built at the port at North Pass in Manshack. The development, it's called the Village at Port Manshack. It would include homes, boat slips, hotel. Now, to get specific, if you're picturing Lake Pontchartrain, this is the eastern portion between Ponchatoula and Laplace. That's Port Manshack. And to give a little history about this area, the state designated this as a state port in 1962. And it served as a loading dock during the construction of Interstate 55. Today, the port rents its space to a chemical blending company. Now, you may have heard of this in the news recently. The port came under fire when it considered allowing an Australian graphite processor to locate a factory there. Everybody was up in arms, including environmentalists, residents, and fishermen as well. And that led to the defeat of the project. So a no-go on the graphite plant. And now, just recently, the village at Port Manshack hit a stumbling block last week when the port's governing commission decided it needs a legal opinion before it can move forward. So the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, was denied. So basically what we're looking at is they say they don't know if they can do this because they don't know whether or not the law creating the industrial site allows it to be switched from being a port to now a residential/resort venue. So the Port Commission held open the possibility of approving the $90 million tourist and residential venue, but it voted to first request an opinion from the Louisiana Attorney General as to whether the commission could legally transform the port from an industrial facility to a resort. So this is clearly a long ways from being done, a done deal, if it ever gets the okay to change from industrial to residential. And before we jump into this, let me first throw out some details as to what the developers are envisioning. Terry Jones is the principal investor in the village at Port Manshack, and he's pitching the development as a nature-based community. He says the development would include 100 single-family homes along the canals and with boat slips. Would also have a hotel and 400 to 500 cabins, condominiums, and apartments. Now, mock-ups of the proposed development present a boardwalk with restaurants, ice cream stands, kayak areas, and a sandy swimming cove. And one more thing, the developer said visitors could take advantage of the surrounding marshes for swamp tours, bird watching, and experiences like planting a cypress tree. And one more thing, and in the spirit of connecting with the heritage, developers are hoping to rebuild the historic Manshack Lighthouse. Well, hot dang. I mean, this has got a little bit of everything. Don, I know you like sandy swimming coves, and Wendy, did you hear the part about the bird watching? That's right up your alley there, huh?
Yes, I did. And you know, the birds are there already.
And I don't know about y'all, but planting a cypress tree, I mean, that's a hobby of mine. I love planting cypress trees. Anytime you give me the opportunity to plant a cypress tree, I am all on board. But seriously, guys, let's talk about this because it actually sounds great, but there's just so much to consider. With it being right on Lake Pontchartrain, with all the environmental impacts that it may bring. So, first off, I want to get your thoughts on the development, and we could pick it apart in the upcoming conversation as far as the environmental impacts. But let's just step back and talk a little bit about your overall impression with this. Don, we could start with you if you'd like.
Sure. You know, this is the age-old argument, preservation versus development, and it's usually a pretty sticky issue. You know, I'm a firm believer in that someone should be able to do whatever they want with their property. It's theirs. They own it. And as long as it doesn't interfere with the guy next door, then, you know, he's within his rights to develop it and capitalize on it if he sees fit. This particular, it does sound like a wonderland the way you described it. 100 single-family homes, 500 to 400 cabins, a hotel, place for kayak, a swimming cove. It just sounds like a wonderful community. And certainly, as long as something like that is copacetic and compatible with the surrounding area, there probably isn't a bad thing about it. We certainly need development. We need economic engines. And, boy, this sure could be one. I mean, it's going to be adjacent to two wildlife management areas, the Joyce and the Manchac Wildlife Area, so there's a lot of public areas for people to go hunting and fishing in. I kind of look back at a couple of these communities that were done and are there already. I'm talking about Venetian Isles in Orleans Parish, right there on the Chef, and then Eden Isles on the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain. Now, I'm old enough to remember both of those areas before those communities were put in. And I can tell you what they were. They were fishing and hunting paradises. Where Eden Isles is, there used to be ponds. It was a marsh, and there was a lot of waterfowl there, soft-shell crabs. There was a brackish mix of fishing in there. And a similar thing on the other side, on the Chef Pass, where Venetian Isles was put in. Now, if you ask any of those residents that live in there and are fortunate enough to have a beautiful home, that they have a driveway and a garage on the front, and in the back they got their boat in the dock that they can get access to canals and Lake Pontchartrain and marshes back there, they love it. And I don't think those communities are adversely impacting the environment. I think that they were done in such a way. Certainly there was a lot of pristine marshland that was sacrificed. I didn't think the fill was ever going to end being trucked into Eden. It took some place, there's a hole that is very, very deep where the soil came to fill that area. But finally they did it, and you know, now you look at Lakeshore Estates and Wrigley's Estates and Treasure Island, and those people have chosen to build up high enough. They're going to face the storm. I don't know what their insurance expenses are, and some of them probably aren't even able to get it living that way, and I think that would probably be a real concern here. But, you know, I'm not really totally opposed to that, although I can also tell you that being a 45-year resident of St. Tammany Parish, places that I drive by now where I hunted, where I fished, is developed. It's off limits. You can't go there. There are parking lots. There's concrete in these places, and it really kind of gets you down. But then again, you can't hold back progress because these are people who legitimately own the property. They've gone through the proper channels to get the zoning changed to where they can develop what they've got. I spent last week on Orange Beach. I was over there on the coast of Alabama. What a wonderful area that is. I can't tell you what an economic engine that is. I think that may be one of the sleepiest, quietest, least known areas that is close to what they have in Florida, in Las Vegas. I mean, there's high-rise hotels and camps, and the beaches are extremely clean. They've got good enforcement. You look at the water, it's crystal blue, and people are swimming in it. So I think we can live in harmony with nature. And maybe that's what will happen here. But as you mentioned, you know, at the very beginning, this is a long way off. I see there's going to be a battle in the Attorney General's office. They certainly need to rezone it from a port to a resort community. There's a whole different set of regulations that, that fit both of those applications, and that needs to be done. Then there's going to be Corps of Engineers dragged in to do environmental impact statements, DEQ, Wildlife and Fisheries. They've got a long row to hoe to get this development off the ground. But once it's done, if it's done in a way where, you know, the septic discharge is processed properly and it doesn't impact anything, and they put in tight regulations to where they don't pollute anything, it certainly is going to be a great job creator. There's no doubt about that. I mean, just the work to get it constructed is one thing, and then it will create jobs, you know, in and around that area, which has very little right now. So I can't say I'm opposed to it, but what I would say, I would be opposed to it if it's not done in the proper way. And sometimes things have a way, when you got money, big money involved, of slipping through and things fall through the cracks, and we find out later and everybody looks at each other and said, how the heck did we end up with this? But again, looking at other communities that are on water, I don't think they're totally bad things at all.
Yeah, and I think the key point was that you said was when money gets involved, it seems like the, you know, the ones that are in favor of the economy and bringing money in as far as tax revenue seem to win out. Wendy, I'm going to let you talk, and then I'm going to weigh in.
I really had a question to start with, and I really don't know the answer. You partially touched on it. You said they're currently leasing the port to some kind of chemical plant?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I was wondering why they were looking to even consider the Australian graphite processing plant. I mean, is the port not making money, losing money? Were they looking to generate revenue by doing this?
The only thing I can see is, and I've researched this, and it says that it hasn't been a success in the past. So, you know, I don't know revenue, what they're looking at. I don't know what they, you know, deem a success, but it hasn't. It says it hasn't been a success. So that's, that's all I've come across, Wendy.
Well, without saying so, it tells me that the port isn't profitable.
Right.
As it stands currently.
Right.
So you go looking for something else, and I just, you know, I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, no surprise. you know, I can just imagine that this development was already quietly waiting in the wings while this graphite plant was being considered. And so when that fails as an industrial answer to the Port Commission generating more revenue, here we come with this developer, and he swoops in with this, you know, this great attractive brainchild of a development to assuage the people who previously opposed, you know, industry or the graphite plant. And, you know, we'll swoop in, all palm trees and ice cream stands and kayakers, and no one will even notice that we're probably going to destroy 100 acres of virgin wetlands in order to do so.
Correct.
And as Don pointed out, then there's a question of whether this type of development would even be allowed under the current industrial zoning. So
yep.
Cart before the horse.
Yeah,
in that regard.
Yeah. And, you know, we're always quick to bash the state. We're last in all the categories, and we're at the bottom of all the good lists, they say. So when something like this comes along and it looks promising and sounds great, we're quick to criticize. And I just wonder why does it seem like any change has a negative reaction? Look, I'm as guilty as anyone, but I think the main issue I have is somehow Louisiana doesn't seem to be very good at waterfront developments. I mean, you see it in Florida, you know, Alabama, Texas, they seem to be a little bit better at it. I don't know if it's the hurricanes that come through here. That definitely has an impact on waterfront structures, you know, across this area. And it's obvious when you look around by all the damaged houses or camps that line the canals around here and in the lake. And I think that's where my mind goes when we talk about this. I think about the future of, you know, what happens after a huge flood or a hurricane. You know, what if it becomes a ghost town and it's, you know, beautiful marshland on the lake? It just becomes another eyesore with, you know, like the peel back tin roofs and, you know, a few pylons left on the wharfs that line the shoreline. I mean, we've seen it happen before, and that's where my mind goes. Is what happens when this, you know, this beautiful community gets hit like this? Would they just take off, and it's just wasted, beautiful marshland, pristine marshland that is now just riddled with old houses or something? So that's where my thoughts go. But we're going to have to take a break, guys, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this. We're going to talk about, you know, from a fisherman's view, because we're seeing a lot of issues in Louisiana, including the private waters right now. So it just seems like we just want to leave everything alone, please. So I'm sure you two have plenty to say when we come back. So let's get to the break, and we'll pick back up when we return on Fish Talk on More Outdoors. Welcome back to Hunt Fish Talk. We're talking this morning about the development called the Village at Port Manchac that developers want to build at North Pass. The new development will include homes, boat slips, and a hotel. Now, this is the eastern portion of Lake Pontchartrain between LaPlace and Ponchatoula. This is a $90 million project that would take over the port's 40-acre site as well as 100 acres of neighboring wetlands. The six-member South Tangipahoa Port Commission held open the possibility of approving the $90 million tourist and residential venue, but voted to first request an opinion from the Louisiana Attorney General as to whether the commission could legally transform the port from an industrial facility to a resort. So basically, this looks like a a long shot to me is speaking, you know, as a lake pontchartrain fisherman, I think it's probably best. And that's what I want to get to on this segment, and that's the environmental aspects of this project. More development on the North Shore, more runoff. The Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation has relatively remained neutral on this issue. They say they can't take sides, but they are waiting to contribute scientists to the study, you know, to study the effects of this development, which I think something's not right about that. Terry Jones, I heard in one of his talks that he said they remain neutral, but I'm hearing that they actually don't want this, but they just can't come out and say it. But I think more is going to pop up with that. So I want to get to you, Don and Wendy. Let's put aside the economic impacts of tax dollars and all the fun stuff, and then let's talk about Lake Pontchartrain and the effects it might have to the water quality that, you know, that impacts the whole lake as, you know, a fishing destination. Wendy, let's just start with you.
Well, you know, I'm really not an expert on water quality, and Don mentioned about sewage runoff or whatever. How are they going to handle all that? And I guess if that's what we're specifically talking about, those would be the questions as to whether or not that was done correctly. And, you know, there are videos out there that show you can do great things with this gray water runoff, and that you can, you know, even create healthy environments. But when you talk about how this might affect fishing or water quality or the environment as a whole, my educational eco tour, wetland tour, mine just continues to spit out all this information that I've been screaming to everybody that stepped on my boat for the past 12 years. And, you know, this is part of the coastal zone. And since the double whammies and hurricanes in 05 and 08, in 2007, the state came out with a new master plan. And as a result, these areas were designated as coastal zones and therefore needed to be managed as such across the coast of Louisiana. And even though this would seem further inland, and you consider all the water there, Lake Pontchartrain, and then going south, this is still part and has been designated part of the coastal zone. And so there is something called hydrologic modification. And any time you cut a canal and you change the way the water flows through an area, across a marsh, through a swamp, you change that environment drastically, and most of the time, it is not for the good. And those are the things that I focus on when I think about this project, because if we have not learned anything in all our years of canal cutting, now the canals we've cut in coastal Louisiana are now being touted as being responsible for about 86% of our wetland loss. So my question is, have we not learned anything? Because when you look at the renderings of this village, you clearly see canals will be cut. Canals will be cut for, you know, for the boat access, for kayaking, for that little, you know, sandy beach. So why would we go back to this again?
Well,
why would we even consider destroying virgin wetlands for the sake of something like this? It comes down to that simply for me.
Yeah, and I look at the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation as getting involved in this more and more and putting their foot down, because that's their whole, you know, concentration of their whole reason for existence is the water quality. They're monitoring it. They're standing up for Lake Pontchartrain. So I look for them to get more involved, but like you said, have we learned? I think when it comes down to money, Wendy, it people really don't care. I think it's just, you know, they want to get this thing up, making money, and, you know.
Well, the opportunity to plant a cypress tree is not only insulting to me, it's a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke to see that as an opportunity when, excuse me, you're going to destroy virgin wetlands and give people the opportunity to come back and replant cypress trees. I don't think so.
Yeah, there's numerous things.
That,
go ahead.
Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana, and in partnership with Restore the Earth Foundation, have already planted 24,000 cypress trees up around that area. not directly in the pass, but in that area. And they and also the Basin Foundation have future plantings already planned in these areas.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's just a sign of the times. They know what they need to put in their plans to make it sound more green or more eco-friendly. And, you know, 20 years ago, you could just about scratch out these little lines that we see now, plant a cypress tree, bird watching and all that. It wouldn't matter much. But now I think they know how to, you know, code it. And if you're reading environmental friendly and this and that, it doesn't seem so bad, you know. I mean, heck, I can go plant a cypress tree over there. That's great. I can't plant one anywhere else, you know. But if they make this village, I can go plant one there.
But are we not placing any economic value on the barrier, the storm barrier, that those wetlands now provide for those communities upland from there? Do we not put any economic value on that? See, that's why I would have a whole lot of trouble saying this could be a good thing economically. But flip it over. It's that those virgin wetlands, if they are such, and they're still in good shape and intact, are already providing an economic value. Those trees not only diminish storm surge and hurricane winds, if we're talking about cypress trees, they also perform a passive duty. They take up phosphorus and nitrogen from upland farms, from fertilizers, and that reduces the impact to the dead zone. There's already so much value there. I really don't see how we can turn that around, take it away, and say we've improved upon it.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. Don?
Well, you know, the thing it gets down to is we have what's called no net loss of wetlands. We have wetland mitigation programs. So if this is done in the correct fashion, if they are allowed to proceed with it and they do sacrifice pristine wetlands in name of the development, which the development will have to pass environmental impact statements to where it doesn't cause negative impacts or adverse impacts, but we do lose some wetlands and it's converted into a community, then the developers would be responsible for mitigating it. In other words, putting up an equal value to other wetlands, which could be done on public property, either on the WMAs, which is owned by us. Certainly you wouldn't want to use that money on somebody else's private property, which would deny access to it. But I think the real key to this thing is the elected officials in that area. I'm going to give you a prime example. I've had State Senator Sharon Hewitt on the program a couple of times. She is fighting a development in Jackson, Mississippi, which is going under the guise of flood protection, and it's basically a community for profit. What it's going to do, though, is adversely impact the lower end of the Pearl River, which is part of her area. She developed a task force. She's gotten together nonprofits. She's gotten together the community. She's gotten agencies together. And she is making sure that if this thing does go forward, that their rights and those wetlands are going to be protected. That's what a real leader does. That's what a true elected mm-hmm. official who serves the public does. I'm not talking about these good old boys that they say, look, you can help us get this thing through, and we're going to give you a piece of this action. You're going to get one of those mm-hmm. condos in there, and we'll give it to your grandson or something like that. And look, that stuff goes on, okay?
Absolutely.
It
yeah.
goes on. Someone that they elected that they trust needs to step up on this particular issue, grab the bull by the horns, and make sure that this thing, if it goes, that the wetland mitigation program is properly funded, that it's done in compliance with all the environmental concerns that are out there, and that it becomes a good partner in the community and a good player and a value to where there is some wetlands that are created to replace the ones that are lost. But without some leader, and I know Kim Coates is the Save the Man Shack Coalition, there's Sportsman's Group, there's fishermen's organizations that are ready to pile in on this thing. All of that is fine, but when it comes right down to putting the gavel down and making things happen, that's done in the courtroom and it's done in law and it's done in the legislature. And they've got to have the right person in that elected position to defend their proper rights of that community, because that's where it's going to come down to.
Absolutely, and you mentioned Kim Coates with the Save Our Man Shack Coalition. If anybody wants to keep up to date, boy, she's got the scoop on everything. They have a Facebook page, so hit the Facebook page, and they post all the latest info on what's going on with this, and it is changing very quickly. On the 10th, it was the MOU was denied, and since then, it seems like they're trying to form a new strategy. So it gets kind of interesting.
If I could just add. You know, now that we've got the advent of the internet, and there's a lot of things I don't like about it, but one thing I do, it has made the community and the world much smaller, and it's raised the microscopes. Used to be those good old boys, you couldn't get a hold of them. They'd hide, they'd run. I've had them actually run from me. You couldn't get them by telephone. Their secretaries say they're out of town. They don't return their call. But let me tell you, now with Facebook and internet, people are in communication with each other, and they can put the microscope and hold their feet to the fire and threaten to get them out of office. That's the one thing about an elected official. Their number one goal is stay in this office at all costs. And that, even if that means doing the right thing, they're going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we are coming up on a break here, so we're going to come back. Maybe when we come back, we talk a little bit, maybe some possible alternatives that you'd like to see, or maybe just keep it a port. Wendy, I know you'd like to keep the bird watching aspect of the development. So when we return, we'll talk about the future of Port Manchac. We'll be right back. Hunt Fish Talk on WWL 105.3 HD2. And welcome back to the show. This morning we're talking about a $90 million project that would take over Port Manchac. It's called the Village at Port Manchac. Now, we foo-fooed this left and right, guys, but I have a question for you. Is there any section of Lake Pontchartrain shoreline where you could see this working? I mean, Don, you mentioned Eden Isles has worked. But I've seen drawings of this thing and mock-ups, and something doesn't jive. I just can't see it making it in Manchac. I mean, I looked up some facts, and there's 100 permanent residents in Manchac, in Port Manchac, right now. And And maybe that's where my mind goes to when I think of a big community like this. It just doesn't jive. Do you see this working anywhere on Lake Pontchartrain? Wendy?
I have to tell you, Keith, I'm really not familiar with all those areas around Lake Pontchartrain, not my stomping ground. So I'm really not even sure if I could speak to that. I'm pretty certain that you and Don could, but
mm-hmm. What about you,
I may have to pass on that one.
Well, my question would be is to ask yourself, would our community be better or worse off without Venetian Isles, without Eden Isles, without Lakeshore Estates, without Rigolets Estates, and without Treasure Island? What would you say, Keith?
Yeah, and Don, I don't know what that area looked like. You said you do before those came. So I really have nothing to balance it with. So I can see where you're going with this, and I guess it has built up those areas. And I guess there's no clear-cut answer to that, if it's better or worse. I mean, people think, well, I just want to see woods and go fishing, and that's all I want to see. And then that same person might buy a house there, you know, 10 years later and say, oh, it's the greatest place ever. So I think we won't end up with one, you know, yes, no, right, wrong answer. I think it's just a bunch of opinions. You see it on the North Shore now. It's when people move over here, they're the last ones they want to see move over here. Nobody else move over here. Stop
right,
moving over here,
right.
You know.
Well, you know, one interesting aspect of this would be I'd like to ask the developers, what is going to be the status of those canals? Are they going to be private, or am I going to be able to come in there and fish bass and sockeye?
We really?
Lose
more water, yep.
What
you
price?
Are right about that.
Yeah.
You,
are
I
they going
promise
to put a,
you.
Yeah.
I promise you. There will be little signs at the end of the canal that say, private slip, do not enter.
I don't know. I don't know.
Private canal, keep out.
That would certainly be a consideration in whether
I might even put money on it.
Very, very interesting.
Keith, you pick at me about the bird watching. At least I think you're picking at me about it. But all these things that this gentleman is saying, this will promote. These things are already there. Granted, there's 100 full-time people on Manchac. If you've driven 51, I mean, you've seen what it looks like, okay? This would be like, I don't know if I should have thought of an analogy ahead of time. But I think probably the nicest thing in the area is maybe Middendorf, maybe, down the road.
Yeah.
And there's just a hodgepodge of, it's just commercial fishermen, you know, fishermen, people with camps. Like you said, some places falling down, roofs falling off. I'm kind of surprised the developer would even want to go into this area. But the Joyce Wildlife Management is there. Those are awesome birding opportunities. It's already there. It's already accessible. There are already thriving swamp tours around that area. I've been on them. And there are already paddle trips and guided kayak trips, you know, you put in underneath the underneath 55. All this is already there. That's already established. And he's making it sound like we're going to bring these things to the area. They're already there.
Right. But
what
how
they
many
have to do is bring the people to access those things.
Right. But how many people don't know that's already there? And how many people just read these words and it soothes out their, you know, what they're looking for? Okay, this sounds good. They sound like they're not going to destroy anything, and we could plant cypress trees and birdwatch. And, Wendy, I'm not picking at you when I say birdwatching. I'll pick at you when I call you Miss Know-It-All.
Okay, or Granny.
Okay.
Okay. Then ask me something I do know.
All right. Well, I guess we could wrap this up. Great discussion. Laid out, you know, what's proposed and the problems the developers are going to encounter. One more question. Where do you see this ending up? Do you think they managed to get it done, or does this fail? Where do you guys see it ending up? Wendy?
I would like to make it perfectly clear, if it isn't already, that I'm falling down on the side of being against a development like this. And I'm about to say something that's going to offend a lot of people. But to me, when you talk about mitigation, no offense to Don, that is something that man has come up with to make us feel better about what we're doing. Because developing wetlands in another area to make up for what we might destroy in this area that is currently providing environmental situations and protections is not acceptable. I know it's done. I served on the Terrebonne Parish Coastal Zone Management Board for 4 years, and believe you me, I saw a lot of things come through there that were needing to be permitted. And that's something that, in all the reading of, no one has even mentioned. Before you can even drive a piling to put up a boat shed or in the city of Houma or any city in the coastal zone, before you can destroy a little slough with cattails in it to fill it in to build a commercial building, you must go through the dual permitting process with the Army Corps of Engineers and the Department of Natural Resources. And it's rigorous. It's rigorous. It's not just a little, what are you planning to do? It is a rigorous permitting process. And granted, that's further down the line, but based on my experience, I don't really see this happening. But in regards to mitigation of wetlands, you can look at $10,000 and up per acre. And so with 100 acres alone, maybe they've already written that $1 million price tag into the $90 million total for this development. But yeah, there will be mitigation, but it doesn't replace what's there right now that's already of value and importance in the form of the environment and protection.
Okay, so Wendy says
I'm stepping down now.
Don, what's the call here? You think it's going to happen or no?
I don't know. You know, I would say it could be 50-50 whether this happens or not. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how convincing and how cooperative the project developer is, you know, with the community and with the permitting process and how honest and fair he is. If the project is done properly and they take care of the sewage disposal and they're not an adverse impact to the surrounding environment, it could be a very good economic engine for that area. Again, I look at what happened at Venetian Isles and Eden Isles and all these other states that are on water. And I haven't seen them cause any problems. Yeah, there was some wetlands that were sacrificed for their development, but I don't know if the good that came back for it outweighed it in terms of mitigation. They didn't really have mitigation back then. I think that this project developer's feet needs to be held to the fire, and you know, maybe he'll be priced out of it. If he does it in the proper fashion as far as designing it and implementing it and making it environmentally sound, and then he's hit with the big mitigation bill that he's got to do wetland improvements somewhere else, he may turn around and say, no, let's just go buy some piney woods and dig a big lake and put homes on the water there. Keith, I'm sure you're familiar with that development that's up there near Sandy Hollow, north of Covington.
Yeah.
You know, you've probably fished there.
Yeah.
Look at that. That's an on-water development. Those homes are on the water. Those people, it's all private. You can't go in there unless you own a home and you're on the water and you got your dock, but it's not in wetlands. It was in high drowned ground, and he could take his development and go do that, but I'm sure the allure of it is being so close to the man shack and the swamp and the marshlands and Lake Maurepond, Lake Pontchartrain. You can't get to any of that from that place up near Sandy Hollow, but you could from here. So that's part of the allure of it. It's going to be a battle. It's not going to be done easily either way. It's not going to go away easily, and it's not going to be developed easily. But I'm just hoping that they get the right politician or elected official in place to oversee the thing, to protect his constituents and not sell out to the development and he gets out of there and he's gone.
Yeah, and you mentioned that. Go ahead, Wendy.
Can I bring up one more financial thing? I don't know if you saw this, but a couple days ago, I think it was the Ponchatoula paper, came out with an article that two mystery letters are being searched for in regards to statements that the LADO Department of Transportation says that if anything changes here, the Port Commission will have to pay back $8.6 million that they received from the state.
Right, because they've dedicated that to help the port. I did see that, and I saw a railroad. The railroad that runs through it is against it because they use that for storage containers and stuff for, you know, like back when Katrina hit and hurricane. So they're against
hurricane it. Staging areas, yes.
Yeah. So Don 50-50, I don't see this happening because now I might be going out on a limb here, but I kind of think this is the beginning stages of putting a casino in there. That's what I think fits that area. Just call it just a hunch, but I think this is these people are smarter than what they're leading on to, and I think this is the beginning stages of putting a casino right there on the water on Lake Pontchartrain. So, but we'll see. We will see. All right, we got a few minutes left. Before the break, I think we need to take a few minutes to discuss this flesh-eating bacteria, also known as Vibrio vulnificus. It's time, and we're just going to come back and remind you of the precautions you could take if you have some open wounds that touch this. So we'll be right back after the break. You're listening to Hunt Fish Talk on More Outdoors. Welcome back to the show. All right, we got a few more minutes before the top of the hour, and I think we need to talk a little bit about the Vibrio bacteria that we're seeing pop up in the news. Now, the reports we've had so far are average and comparable to what we've seen in the last decade or so, so we don't want to be alarmist or anything. But now we're seeing something that, frankly, I never knew it could be contracted through, and that's through eating seafood, shellfish, and oysters.
Yeah.
And what happened recently was an outbreak of Vibrio caused by some contaminated crab meat that came from Venezuela. The illnesses have been reported in Maryland, Louisiana, and Pennsylvania, and Washington, D.C. So 12 people who ate the fresh crab imported from Venezuela got sick. Four of them was hospitalized. Now, Wendy, unfortunately, you're the pro when it comes to this. You've had a bout with this flesh-eating bacteria, and you can attest to the way, you know, we may feel about this, and it's, you know, it only happens to other people. It won't happen to me, because I think a lot of us don't think it can happen to us, huh?
Yeah, that's correct, and I think it's much more common than we realize, because it's really, if it doesn't get publicized across social media or the news, you know, we typically may not hear about it, and not everybody, you know, wants their gaping wound out there for all the world to see, but it is the time of year that we need to really watch out for anything, even, you know, getting hooked. And you always get hooked while you're fishing, you know, especially in the salt water where this bacteria is prevalent. I mean, it can get in any kind of open scrape or cut or scratch, and especially if you're older and if you're immune compromised and if you're taking, you know, medications for things like arthritis or anything like that, it really lessens your defenses against this bacteria, and it can be deadly, and it can happen quickly. And I'm not trying to be an alarmist. It's just a time of year to be aware and up your preventative measures.
Yeah, and you say, you know, everybody gets hooked, but I think the majority, almost every time I go out and I'm saltwater fishing, your fingers become pruney when they're wet for so long, and sometimes that monofilament line will just cut right across it and slice the fingertip, and that's all it takes, you know. So, Don, right. Anything to add on this?
Yeah, just, you know, be careful. You know, certainly if you suspect or know you have a compromised immune system, you certainly don't want to consume any raw shellfish. And exposure, you know, there's always the theory about the commercial fishermen always kept a bottle of bleach on board.
Correct.
So when you got the little pricks from the crabs and the shrimp, you know, you start fooling with that stuff, you're going to get punctures in your hands.
Right.
They would always douse their hands in bleach, which would kill it. And that might not be a bad precaution to take.
Well, we did a hunt fish talk on this when you went through your bout, Wendy, and I got to tell you, I was Superman, and now I'm not Superman anymore because I'm a big worry wart. I went out on the Cougar. We did some red snapper fishing out there, and I got a little cut on me. And I tell you, the whole trip, I was looking at it, waiting for it to tingle, waiting for a sign. I'm like, oh, I don't want this stuff. But so thanks a lot, Wendy.
Yeah, I'm really
story
sorry
was
about
incredible.
That. Well, ignorance is bliss until.
Yeah.
Until that little ant bite on your finger.
Yeah.
You know, is the next day this full blown purple mass, and you go, what the heck? All I was doing was cracking crab for bait.
Incredible. Incredible. So you say it's bleach that you're to put on it? What about alcohol, peroxide, none of that?
Just no, bleach is the best because you're looking at killing a bacteria before it gets deep in your system. You got to pull that cut open, and you've got to drown it.
Wow.
And it's going to hurt.
and you
yeah, bring a piece of leather to put in your teeth, kid.
Really?
Something to bite on, yeah.
And you can use a solution in a spray bottle. You can dilute it a little bit and put it mm-hmm. in a spray bottle to make it easier. But, yes, the stronger the better.
Yeah, well, this hit close to home. A quick story. I was talking to a lady I know, and they went to their camp in Grand Isle, and this was just a few weeks ago this happened. They were wade fishing, catching a few redfish. Her husband caught a big sheep's head, and he got it close to his feet and trapped it with his leg so he could pick it up. And the dorsal fin must have pricked his leg. You know, no big
mm-hmm.
deal, just a pinhole. 24 hours later, the next day, could barely walk. And he's in his 60s, a diabetic. That didn't help.
There
but,
you go.
Yeah. Drove the truck back to Slidell, went straight to the hospital. He ended up in a coma for numerous days, almost lost his leg. She showed me pictures of his legs. You could see the skin gone and the fat from the fat on his leg that is below the skin just exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just ridiculous how quick this thing works.
It is.
Oh, so also one more thing to remember. It's also tattoos too. They had a gentleman in Texas that was recovering from, you know, day after or 2 days after getting a tattoo, and just that scraping of his skin, it was allowed to enter into his body. So, Don, next time you get a tattoo, stay, you know, no wait.
I'll keep
okay?
that in mind. Yes, I'll keep that.
Remember this warning.
And listen, lest we upset the commercial fishermen, let's clarify that if you thoroughly cook all your shellfish at this time of year, it's okay to consume them.
Sure.
Just avoid raw oysters. That is the problem, because then you get it inside within your digestive tract.
Yeah, I'm looking so here. It's Vibrio vulnificus, and then I see another one, Vibrio parahum olificus.
That would be the interior.
That's
internal.
The inside, so that's a different
mm-hmm.
different strain of
mm-hmm.
it, I guess. Yeah. Well, all right. We are coming up on the end of the show here, guys. I have a feeling like we're going to be talking about this development in Manchester.
Yeah, I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And Keith, I want to mention the fact you're going to have a two-hour show
Absolutely.
Next Saturday, and you're going to be doing live updates from the Faux Pas Rodeo. That should be neat.
Absolutely. Keep everybody updated. We got a wide range of guests, including Chris Basie. He did a electronics presentation at Bayou Adventure two nights ago and was really well. He really gets into that electronics, the depth finder, and all kind of stuff he showed us on the bottom of the Jafunkta, boats and railroad ties and everything. So very interesting. And
see you two at the LOA conference next
week? Yes, you will.
Yeah, I'll be
deal.
There.
Can't wait.
Good deal.
All right. So
Thank you, gentlemen.
We're gonna get on out of here, and Don, I think you got to be talking guns when we come back, huh?
Yeah, Gavin Sashery and Devin Burgess are standing by in the studio, and we'll have a full hour of talking guns, and one of our features on More Outdoors.
All right, we'll talk to you guys later. WWL 105.3 HD2.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.